From sprains to fractures, get expert care quickly at the University of Kansas Health System. Walk-in orthopedic care is open weekdays, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 to 2, at I-435 and Null. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
Garrettson and Toth presents The Shift with Jack Johnson on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM.
Welcome into another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Shout out to our presenting sponsors, starting with Garrettson and Toth. They handle the most complex felony, federal, or state criminal defense cases. You'll find they've been doing that successfully, helping criminal defendants all over the Kansas City area in Northeast Kansas for years. Also, a shout out to Active Family Chiropractic. If you're dealing with any neck, back, shoulder, or any type of pain, go in today and schedule an appointment. Their office is located on 135th and Antioch in Overland Park, Kansas. Or just give them a call at 913-681-6013. That's 913-681-6013. Stop dealing with the nagging pains that keep you up at night and call Active Family Chiropractic today. Marco, how often, and I'm sure it's a lot, but how often do you see a tweet from the Chiefs social media team, the actual team account, or keep up with it, or remember a tweet they put out?
Oh, all the time, actually, now that I think about it.
So I think you know where I'm going with this.
Oh, I know where you're going with this. Yeah. Chiefs Twitter, whenever they put content out there, it's always talk-worthy, I guess you could say. They give you something to talk about.
100%.
Which helps.
And it benefits them. I would love to work for the Chiefs social media team in the offseason, because here's what happens. The Royals, the last 5 years, have been out of it by May 30th. So what are we Kansas Cityans left to hope for? Well, I mean, if you're a Royals fan and you're still watching the Royals, you're hoping for prospects to come up. But if you're already switching into football season and you're looking into training camp, you want videos of OTAs, which OTAs started yesterday for the Kansas City Chiefs. And boy, did the social media team know exactly which market they were providing content to. They knew the exact fan that would jump all over the videos they were posting yesterday. Now you had a pass from Patrick Mahomes to Juju Smith-Schuster, which, by the way, I know Juju usually wears sleeves when he's playing in games, kind of like Frank Clark. He never really wears, you know, or at least I only remember him really wearing sleeves. He looks like he's bulked up a little bit. Juju looks like a different type of receiver in Kansas City this year. Maybe it's just the number. Maybe it's just a different uniform. But to me, yesterday in that video, Juju Smith-Schuster looked just a little bit different in that Chiefs uniform. But that's not the video I'm talking about. I know Marco knows that's not the video I'm talking about.
That was a good video, though.
It was a great video. I am starting to jump on the Juju Smith-Schuster train. Also, I ordered a jersey, a Chiefs jersey, because I had three selections of Chiefs jerseys in my closet. I had Patrick Mahomes. I have a Travis Kelce one that I bought before Travis Kelce was even a starter, right? You know those ones you can customize and whatever? I got a Travis Kelce one in 2013.
So you made it. You put the 87
in. I put the 87 in the Kelce in. And nobody
nice.
Believes it. Nobody
nice.
Believes me, but you like look at the jersey. It's kind of like if any of you have a Derek Thomas jersey where the numbers are like heavy.
Yeah.
It's like, that's what the Kelce jersey is for me. It's very special to me. I'll never get rid of that Travis Kelce jersey.
You shouldn't. But so what made you do that? Were you just a big Tony Gonzalez fan?
I remember there was
tight
one.
In?
Well, I liked Tony G for sure.
Right.
But when Travis Kelce was drafted, I watched one preseason game. And I think you can remember back. I want to say it was before the 2013 season. It was before he didn't play. Because you remember he was drafted in, I want to say, 13. I want to say 2013. I should know this because I got the. It's just been so long. It's been nearly 10 years. And there was one preseason game where Travis caught a slant and ran it like 65, 70 yards into the end zone. And from that moment, and the announcer, I think it might have been Trenton Green and whoever the other guy was at the time, was he might still be doing the games. I know it's bounced around
Greg
a little
Gumbel?
Bit. No, this was like KCTV5 Chiefs preseason.
Oh,
it was Trenton Green, I remember. And they were saying, they're like, if you thought Tony Gonzalez was good, just wait till you see how good Travis Kelce is.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, he's the guy I'm picking. Because I've always wanted to be that jersey guy that I picked the obscure one. One that I know is going to be good, but not the generic Alex Smith, Jamal Charles.
Yeah.
Like one of the first jerseys I got in the 2010 era, I got a Dexter McCluster jersey. Now, it didn't turn out in the end, but that was back then. I didn't want a Matt Cassel jersey. Of course, I didn't want a Matt Cassel jersey. I didn't want a Jamal jersey because everybody had a Jamal Charles jersey. But the Kelce jersey, that one I hold very dear and near to my heart. The last jersey I bought for the Chiefs was Tyrann Mathieu. I bought the minute he signed, I was like, that when that's going up for sale, I'm getting a Tyrann Mathieu jersey. Now, I went outside the box. I went deep thinking of who I wanted to be next. I don't want Chris Jones because Chris Jones may not be here next year. I mean, he could very well be traded, right? I don't want to go out and get a Juju jersey because Juju may be gone next year. So I ponied up and got a Creed Humphrey jersey. And it arrived yesterday, and it is glorious.
Nice.
And that is a jersey I'm going to have for a very long time. Because just like my Kelce jersey, back then, this one will stand out. Not many people are going to be repping Creed Humphrey, but I will now. But back to the point, we're on a tangent about jerseys right now. I'm talking about OTAs and what happened yesterday and the videos we are provided with. Well, this guy might get some jersey sales if he makes the team. And what's so interesting is we are giving more hype to this guy than we are to our second-round draft pick, Sky Moore. And I think now you know where I'm going in this direction. It's Justin Ross. And Justin Ross, who, if he didn't have a near-career-ending injury or condition, Justin Ross would have gone first round. Justin Ross, if he could have been drafted his freshman year, if he was eligible to be drafted his freshman year at Clemson, he would have gone top 10. That's how good Justin Ross was. Mm-hmm. I think he had 1,000 yards for Clemson, was electric in the college football playoffs. I mean, completely eviscerated Alabama's secondary. I mean, destroyed them. And he's 6'4", 210, and can run. I think he ran a 4.7. Now, you may think that's slower because now we have wide receivers running 4.3s, 4.4s all the time. But when you're 6'4", you're not going to run a DK for 40-yard time. I mean, you're going to have a good balance of between 4.5 and 4.8. I'll take a 4.7 from Justin Ross. But he went undrafted because nobody wanted to touch Justin Ross because of that condition he had. But the Chiefs looked at it and said, okay, let's get him cleared by doctors. Let's see if doctors will clear him first things first. And then, if he is cleared, we'll get him in our undrafted free agent group. You know, that's where we'll go get Justin Ross. We don't need to use a pick on him because nobody seems to be using a pick on Justin Ross. And when he became available, I'm still shocked the rest of the NFL allowed Justin Ross to fall to Kansas City. Because now, I think we're starting to see something that's very telling. And what's telling is Patrick Mahomes is quote-tweeting Justin Ross. Travis Kelce's quote-tweeting Justin Ross. They don't do that for guys that are undrafted free agents and are not going to make the roster. Now, things could still happen between now, training camp, preseason, and the regular season. Justin Ross very well could never play a snap for the Kansas City Chiefs. But in the video they posted out yesterday, I don't know where the ball is being thrown from, but looks like a deeper out route. Looks like Justin Ross went about 10, 15, maybe 20 yards down the field and then went right towards the sideline. And whoever threw it, maybe it was Mahomes, looked like one of the most difficult one-handed catches you could have. We see one-handers up like this, and I'm only doing this because the camera can be on me. Actually, it's a little bit low. I'll change that on the break. It's a little bit low. You can still see me, but the board behind me you can't see. I think you can see my arms moving right now. So
actually, yeah, you can.
You can see it.
Yeah.
You can see it. Yeah, it was a little bit delayed, which is weird to see right here. But one-handed catches, if you played football, I would say the easiest ones to have, and they're not easy by any means, they're more up here. And when you can have that sort of grip and you have bigger hands, it's easy to make those catches. Well, Justin Ross made a one-handed catch by his shoestrings on the run. That's damn near impossible when you think about it. When you are running in stride, if you played wide receiver, if you've seen wide receivers play, it's incredibly difficult to go down with one hand, and it wasn't like he bobbled it either. It wasn't like he tapped it up to himself and then caught it with two hands. No, it was like a bear claw, just went down and grabbed it, and he caught it, got 2 feet in bounds. And Patrick Mahomes quote-tweeted it, Travis Kelce quote-tweeted it, and the coolest thing that Patrick Mahomes said was that after the catch, Justin Ross acted like it wasn't a big deal, like he's done this hundreds of times before. And these are the type of things you're going to see, I think, all through OTAs, all through training camp, about what Justin Ross looks like. Now, OTAs are different than training camp because OTAs, a lot of these guys, they're running without pads. In fact, they are running without pads. They're running routes sometimes against no defense. So, yeah, they're going to stand out a little bit more. I remember the first time Josh Gordon was in a Chiefs uniform in the regular season, I went to the Bills game, and Josh Gordon was activated for that game. And I remember watching warm-ups. I'm like, this guy's ridiculous, right? He is going to get more than 20 snaps tonight because of the way he just looks on the field and in warm-ups. But some guys are practice guys. So Justin Ross very well could be a practice guy. But the positive thing is it's not like the Chiefs use a third-round pick on Justin Ross, just completely gambled high in the draft with as many picks as they had. No, they waited, and they waited, and they waited. And they probably thought about that in the boardroom, that if Justin Ross falls out of the draft, we're going to contact him. But if he gets picked up in the seventh round, he gets picked up in the seventh round. There's nothing we can do about it. I just feel like with the way the Chiefs are kind of scheming, because are we really naive to think that the Chiefs social media team doesn't have some sort of ear on what's going on in the front office? They don't know everything. But I think they can tell, being at OTAs, being at practice, how involved a certain player can be. And that's not to say Sky Moore has been a bust. Sky Moore has been publicized by the Kansas City Chiefs, but Justin Ross, for being an undrafted free agent, is getting a lot of content because of, number one, his name, right? Justin Ross was a big name going into this draft because it was all about who will take a chance on him. It's not a, you know, it's not like he's a troublemaker off the field. He just had a condition that could end his career. And that still is the major concern. That, by far and away for me, is the number one concern over Justin Ross performing for Kansas City. I would rather have Justin Ross play for Kansas City and be a good player, but above everything else, be a healthy player, not having his life after football derailed because of this. You know, having Justin Ross burst onto the scene for five games, have two games over 100 yards receiving, which wouldn't happen, but you get what I'm saying, and then have a career-ending injury would be tough to stomach. Not just from the Kansas City Chiefs, but from a human aspect, to see a kid who's 21 have what he is spent his entire life trying to get to this level, and then have one bad hit end his career. But the positive thing is that the doctors have approved him medically. If they felt like one bad hit could end his career, they wouldn't have cleared him medically, unless it's just a bad doctor, the one that's trying to get Justin Ross on the field. And you know, when you talk about the ethics of this, and it's really tough because, like what I just said, health is the number one concern. And I don't know, Marco, we'll talk about sports movies here after the break, but you've seen Glory Road.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Glory Road.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the name of the player.
For KU?
For Texas Western.
Oh, okay, for Texas Western.
It's look up the cast. I'm going to, in the moment, because this is also a true story, the Texas Western team that beat KU and then Kentucky in the NCAA tournament. But one of the players in the movie, and I'm sure it was in real life, it was not Bobby Joe Hill. It was not, let's see here, wasn't Harry Flournoy. I think it was Willie. Yes, it was Willie Cager. Willie Cager. So in that movie, Willie Cager has the irregular heartbeat. They find out later on that he's got this irregular heartbeat that if he continues to play basketball, it could cost him his life. So immediately, Don Haskins, the head coach, says, well, I'm not going to play him. I can't have that on my mind that anytime I put Willie out on the floor, he could die at any moment. Because in the movie, they're practicing or whatever, and he's running up and down the floor, then he collapses.
Yep.
And so in the movie, he talks with Willie Cager, and he says, I can't play you for the rest of the season. And Willie Cager basically says, you have to play me because I have to, like, basketball is all I have. Basketball is life to me. If you take that away, I will die. So that's the ethical dilemma. And I'm sure Justin Ross, we don't know what happened on in the evaluation, you know, area. We don't know what the doctors said to Justin Ross. We don't know what Justin Ross said to the doctors. This is completely speculation. But I'd imagine he pleaded this case of, listen, this is all I've done my entire life is want to be a football player and want to get to the NFL. Now, I don't think a doctor still would take that plea, because in the movie, Don Haskins doesn't take that plea because he says you're much more than a basketball player. You will have a life after basketball. But in this case with Justin Ross, different scenario, right? I don't think Justin Ross, and as far as I know, I don't know much about the condition that he has, but I don't imagine one hit in the NFL could potentially be fatal to him. It would just not allow him to play football ever again. But that's always the ethical dilemma when it comes to situations like this. Same thing with Trey Smith, right? Trey Smith had the blood clots. Remember, it was the blood clots up near his lungs, was it, Marco? Lungs or heart? With Trey Smith. It was a blood clot.
It was his thighs.
thigh. Sorry, no, yep. Yeah. Say up.
So I was thinking the Glory Road character. I was like, the basketball player you're talking about.
Yes.
I think his thing was his heart.
Thing was his heart. Trey Smith was the thighs.
Yep.
So still, that is a dangerous situation. But I'm sure Trey Smith said, hey, I'm still the same player, and I didn't have any problems last year. Justin Ross was like, hey, I played last year. No problems. You can draft me. I took hits last year. Right? So now the NFL, you're getting hit a little bit harder. But it's that type of ethical dilemma, and I think that's what's tough for coaches. It's what's tough for doctors because this is a 21-year-old kid. Trey Smith was 21, 22. You do not want to put them in a situation where it could be life-changing in a bad way. That one hit, you know, maybe working too hard, it could be fatal to them, or down the road it could really affect the rest of their life. But Justin Ross, all things have pointed to so far that he is fine medically. Now, things can still change, and I'm not hoping for that. I'm just saying you got to be cautious with this. I'm not going to look at this, be naive, and say one highlight reel, all these catches he's making from Patrick Mahomes, now he's in the clear, right? Now he's totally fine because he still has that condition, and he's going to have to play with that condition. But I do think it's a good sign, number one, to look at him from a human standpoint and say, that's really cool that everybody passed on him, and he knew after his freshman year, I mean, he's thinking probably in his mind as an 18-year-old, I have the ceiling of being a top 10 draft pick in the NFL. Then 2 years later, after something he can't control, he falls out of the draft. He's an undrafted free agent, but goes into a scenario, goes into a situation where he's playing with the best quarterback in the NFL, and he has a chance to make this roster and make an impact for a team that is going to be a favorite in the AFC. It's a cool situation, but first and foremost, Marco, what I'll ask you on this, let's steer away from maybe the condition that he has. Is it something we are reading too much into of the social media hype, the video content hype we're giving Justin Ross, or is there something behind it that this really could be something that, okay, the Chiefs are already planning for Justin Ross to make this roster?
I wouldn't read into it that far yet because it was the first day of OTAs, Chiefs social media. We got to remember what they're aiming for as, what they're aiming for as their job duties and job responsibilities. That's to create chatter, put out content that's going to create some noise. And what better than to get some shots? And you know what? It's not saying that he's not a talented kid or anything. By all means, we know that he's a talented kid. I'm just saying that the Chiefs social media team, they know how to create some chatter, and Justin Ross arguably is the hottest undrafted free agent in this year's class, and he's in Kansas City. There was a lot of talk about him after the Chiefs had signed him following the draft, so he's a hot name right now. People remember his name more so than some of the draft picks that the Chiefs made this year. So As far as making the roster, I think just like every player that's there right now, he has a shot to make it, whether it's a 53 or the practice squad. The clip that we saw yesterday, and the clips that we've seen even from rookie minicamp, again, you take it with a grain of salt, but he looks healthy. He is out there practicing. It's not like he's sidelined to start off. No, he's out there participating in the drills, so that's a good sign as well. And I just like every rookie, he has a shot at making the team just like them. And I think we'll know more, and as OTAs go on, we'll know more, maybe a better picture of some guys that may stand out more than others, of who could be the guys that you keep an eye on going in the training camp, as those type of players that it's like, all right, they performed at OTAs. Now can they follow that up with the same performances in training camp and in the preseason games before cuts start happening? Because it's going to be real interesting to see. And I think he makes it through cuts. I think right now, the ceiling is 53-man roster, and the basement is practice squad form. Because this isn't the type of player that you just let out of your organization. So very curious to see how he goes through OTAs, and then of course whether or not he follows up what he does there up in St. Joe.
Yeah, the one thing that the Chiefs can probably do with this, and it's a positive, is, you know, if they do plan to cut Justin Ross, they could get him back on their practice squad. But then you have the problem of, well, somebody could pluck him off the practice squad, which somebody may look into that and say the one mistake we made was that we let the Chiefs get Justin Ross. Now if he's on the practice squad, we can take Justin Ross from the Kansas City Chiefs. But I'm hoping, and I'm hoping that he does reach the ceiling of 53-man roster and then making an impact at this level. But love to see how OTAs go, which continue later on today. We'll see how training camp goes, and then we, of course, will see how preseason goes for the undrafted free agent rookie Justin Ross. When we come back here on the shift, when we come back here on the shift, we'll talk about some sports movies and if they still hold up today. You're listening to the shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into the shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. I'm excited for this next segment because we know that some movies can stand the test of time. They never get old. They hold up today. The scenes still impact you the same. The acting's great. And there's some that over time, they seem a little cheesy. We go back and watch them, we just think, man, I don't know why I ever thought this movie was this good. So, Marco, I'm going to bring you in for this segment. And when I look at these movies, I think I know where, at least on some of them, where you'll lean toward. But the question will be simple. You can answer the question, and then you can explain why you feel this way. If this movie holds up today, I'll tell you when the movie was released, I'll tell you who was in the movie, and I'll tell you what Rotten Tomatoes gave that movie. So we'll start it off with this. Friday Night Lights, 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Rotten Tomatoes gave it an 82%. Metacritic gave it a 70%. It had Connie Britton, who was in the show Friday Night Lights, Billy Bob Thornton, who played Coach Gary Gaines, Lucas Black played Mike Winchell as the quarterback. And we know that maybe if you've seen the series, you may feel differently about the movie. But for the most part, a relatively similar style of movie is a comparison to the show. The show was just obviously longer. Does it hold up today? Does Friday Night Lights with Billy Bob Thornton as Coach Gary Gaines hold up if you watched it in 2022?
I'm going to ask you for your opinion because I've never seen Friday Night Lights.
Okay, so if you haven't seen the movie, you can always defer to me. And if I haven't seen the movie, then I guess that is what it is. I like the show.
Yeah.
Because I think the show, it built up more time. Now, there were some really stupid parts of the show where they spent a lot of time worrying about stuff that just simply didn't matter. Like, mm-hmm. honestly, for me, Friday Night Lights, and you haven't seen the series either, because I think I asked you this when I was watching it.
No.
You haven't seen either.
Uh-huh.
So on the show, the best season was the last one, by far and away.
Wow.
There was some garbage seasons in like 2 and 3 that I nearly gave up watching the series. Because I'd come into the show, like, angry, because I spent, like, 3 hours the night before binging it. I'm like, I gained nothing from those episodes last night, because they're focusing about stuff that was not football. When I watch a show or movie about Friday Night Lights, I want it to be about football. Now, this movie is good. It's a true story of the Permian High School, I believe, in Odessa, Texas, I want to say. It's a cool movie because it really shows what high school football is like in Texas. And I have one friend that is from the Texas area that lives up here now. And she said that that's pretty much what Texas high school is like, is it's all football. Like, everybody in the town knows the players. They all care about what happens. And they're all really mad when the team loses. This movie, I will give it this, is very well acted. And that's what can hold up for me in football movies. And how they look playing. If it looks cheesy, and for me, when I watch football, baseball, and basketball movies, it's very easy to tell with the first game they show how cheesy it will be. How they throw the ball, how they catch the ball, how they run with pads, how dorky they look. This one looks pretty good. This one and how the actors are played. Now it's the stunt doubles. It's the stunt doubles making the plays, and it makes it seem like it's a real football movie. And what I loved, I won't spoil it, it's not the Cinderella happy ending that all these high school football movies have, where it's they win the championship, they win state, yada, yada, yada. No, it's a real-life scenario, and it really happened. And then they were able to make another movie called Carter High off of Friday Night Lights. So I will say, though, it was made 18 years ago, I'll say it holds up in today's world. Now, I know you've seen this next movie, and I think I know your answer. Remember the Titans, 2000. Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 73%, 48% on Metacritic, don't know how, so screw Metacritic. Denzel Washington plays Coach Herman Boone. Ryan Hurst plays Jerry Bertier. Ryan Gosling. It's so funny. They give Ryan Gosling. I know why they give Ryan Gosling such a high up spot in the casting list, even though he was kind of a subpar player. In fact, he was a liability on the field. Wood Harris plays Julius Campbell. Wood Harris was also in Winning Time, the Lakers documentary. They also have...
He was Haywood, right?
Yeah, he was Haywood, Spencer Haywood. Will Patton plays Coach Bill Yost. Ethan Suplee plays Louis Lastic. My favorite football movie, so I'm going to say it holds up. But as for you, can a movie like Remember the Titans, which is set back, I want to say, in the 60s, 1971, excuse me, 1971 high school football in Virginia, does it hold up today? And could you watch it and still say, I like this movie, I like what it stands for, and I like that it hasn't really changed for me since I watched it back when I was 5, 6, 7 years old?
Absolutely. It's a Denzel movie, so of course it holds up to this day. Listen, Remember the Titans, I think it's that type of movie that brings people who enjoy the sport of football, but also the people who don't care much about football, but the relationships, the storytelling along the way, because there's a story there other than the game of football. The game of football just helps helps tell it, I guess you could say. Using a football team as an example of a coming togetherness, that brotherhood, those relationships in a small town too, especially of a community coming together, but yet a community divided, but yet coming together. There's a lot of good messages in the film, but absolutely, yeah. Remember the Titan? That is that's what you call a classic. It's like it. I'm trying to think for our parents what movie it would be. You know, maybe it's the Remember the Titans to us is maybe like The Longest Yard or Brian's Song for our parents.
Yeah, or Rudy, which we'll get
into
here.
Rudy, there you go.
It's very similar to
that. There you go. Yep, yep. The story's there.
The story. And I still think there are very few sports movies that can get me emotionally.
Yeah.
Like, really can strike you deeply. Remember the Titans is one of them. There's a lot of funny comedic humor throughout the movie. I mean, there are some really deep, dark moments in that movie, and also very emotional moments that still, I mean, that one, and then We Are Marshall. I mean, I don't know how you, if you watch We Are Marshall and don't shed a tear, I don't know how you can
have a
soul. I don't know. There's no soul for you if you don't like We Are Marshall. Now let's go to Rudy. Now we need to change up, because I do have some opinions on Rudy. Rudy, 1993. Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 78%, Metacritic 71%. Sean Astin plays Daniel E. Rudy Rudiger. John Favreau plays D-Bob. It's so funny that John Favreau is in that movie, and I always forget it. And he's one of his best friends in it.
Yep.
Ned Beatty plays Daniel Rudiger. That's Rudy's dad.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm blanking on the name right now. Vince Vaughn, I forgot, plays Jamie O'Hara. You remember Vince Vaughn's in that movie?
Wow.
I think he's the
assistant head or assistant coach.
I think
coach.
He's a player?
Was he a player?
Been a while.
I
Charles S. Dutton
okay.
is in that movie, and he plays the
why do I remember Vince,
janitor?
Vince Vaughn, I feel like he was...
I thought he was like the...
I thought he was the coach the that would
jerk.
Always pin up the...
Hold on, I'm going to look it up while you give your thoughts on it.
The blue and gold team, you know what I mean?
I thought he was like the jerk. He's a player. He's a player.
He's a player.
That's
okay,
what I
wow.
thought, man. He looks nothing like... Yeah, he was the jerk. He was the jerk that hated Rudy. So I thought he was the player. He was not a coach. Because back then, in 93, Vince Vaughn had to be incredibly young. I mean, probably upper 20s at that point. If you look at a picture of him, he looks nothing like Vince Vaughn. I mean, a little bit, but the way we all perceive Vince Vaughn, he doesn't look anything like it.
That's what Vince Vaughn looked like?
Yep. I remember him in the back. I saw it in high school, because in one of our English classes, we watched Rudy for a assignment.
Yo, what happened to Vince Vaughn?
I don't know. But I now remember him being the jerk in that movie.
Wow. Wow, 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 wow. Yeah, if you sat me down and told me that's Vince Vaughn, like...
I would never thought it. That's why I was like, man, Vince Vaughn was in this movie, wasn't it? A small role, I think. Well, in the grand scheme of things, maybe a bigger role in terms of Rudy making it onto the field one day. Do you think it holds up, though? It's a true story, but does it hold up? I've got some opinions that you may disagree with.
Well, hold on one sec. Because, yes and no, I guess. Once again, the story's there, but I think... It's like, I think it's a little bit of an outdated movie, in the sense that, you know, there's like those horror movies that they try, especially the older ones, they try to scare you or something, but it's like, man, that's...
It doesn't scare you anymore.
No, it doesn't scare you because it's...
Predictable.
Predictable. The effects aren't like what they are now. It's just, it's an outdated type of movie. Rudy, the story's there. It's a very good underdog story. You mentioned Fortune. The speech that he gives to Rudy. The locker room scenes and pregame. It's a nice story, but it's when you watch it, you're kind of like, this, what? There's just some parts of it where it's like they didn't care. They cared more about the message than the actual football itself a little bit.
Well, we want to.
But that happens.
We want to believe here, right, that Notre Dame in the movie is Alabama.
Oh yeah.
Right. Notre Dame is the powerhouse of college football in this movie, and Rudy Rudiger is, according to the janitor, 5'0", 100 and nothing, right? Yet he walks on. Okay, and that here's my first problem is that I think, and I know it's a true story, so I can't really question the legitimacy of this because it happened, right? This isn't just some fictional story. Like, Notre Dame let Rudy onto the team, but in terms of today's world, if a 5'6", 150-pound nothing guy walked up to Alabama and said, I'm going to walk on. I'm going to not only walk on, I'm walking on as what was he, an edge rusher?
Yeah, I don't linebacker.
Okay, let's
front
backpedal
seven
here. I mean, there's no way in hell a 5'6", 150-pound player could walk onto Alabama and play. Now, back then, this is why we're saying it doesn't hold up, because it couldn't happen today. That's what the question is. Also, I don't know if you've seen that. There's a separate documentary on Rudy, and when the famous play at the very end when Rudy makes the sack, right?
Yeah.
It's Hollywood dramatizing it that he turns into Derek Thomas and bull rushes off the line and gets to the quarterback in 2 seconds.
He was waiting.
Yeah, you're telling me the way the movie did, it was like, get in there, Rudiger. He immediately gets in, and you're telling me just nobody blocked him? Nobody blocked him. But in the actual play, the actual movie, Rudy does make the sack. But there is another edge rusher, and he's interviewed in the documentary, that he trips up the quarterback. Like, he gets there, he trips up the quarterback, makes him stumble, and then Rudy gets the sack. And he's joking about it, and he goes, that famous play, yeah, I should have been credited with at least half a sack. Because Rudy didn't rush off the line like he did in the movie, go unblocked, and just deliver a pounding hit on the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just, to me, as great as the movie was, I can't say it holds up today. Because we still consider Notre Dame a national brand, right?
Absolutely.
And I don't think now a 5'6", 150-pound linebacker could walk on anywhere, let alone Notre Dame, and play, or Alabama, or Georgia. It just wouldn't happen. It wouldn't happen. The players are different now. Have you seen Jordan Davis, who was drafted by the Eagles?
That's like five Rudys.
That's five Rudys thrown into one. You know, 6'6", 370 pounds, like that. There weren't players like that all over the country back when Rudy played. But still, admire what he did, because not many players would stick with it like that. There'd be more transfer portal if there was a Rudy today.
Oh, my God.
But I will say that, yeah, Rudy, for me, it doesn't hold up in today's world. That would be nearly, I guess, 30 years later. It's a 28-year-old movie. All right, here's another one I have some opinions on. The Sandlot, 1993. We'll do one more after this. Sandlot, 1993. 64% on Rotten Tomatoes. 55% on Metacritic. Mike Vitar plays Benny the Jet Rodriguez. Patrick Renna plays Ham Porter. Tom Geary plays Scotty Smalls. And Chauncey Lepardi plays Squints. Does Sandlot hold up nearly 30 years later?
Yeah, of course it does. Because that's an appreciation of the history of baseball. 90% of that cast, their characters would make a better commissioner than Rob Manfred. That's not a reason why it would hold up now. I'm just thinking about that. Because you feel that love of the game through those characters, and it reminds you of summertime and being a kid. That's a movie that has a flashback. And once again, it's if you grew up playing baseball, sandlot style, little league style. You had your group of friends that you would roll with, because that's what that movie reminds me of. We used to play backyard baseball at a couple of my buddies' houses. We rode our bikes everywhere. We did have to go buy baseballs out of the wazoo. That scene where they have to go and get some money together to go buy a baseball,
I
feel like we've all been there before.
Yep.
We've all been there because someone hit the ball over the fence in the neighbor's yard. So, that movie still holds up. You got me wondering now. I should probably ask my 12-year-old nephew if he's ever seen The Sandlot, because I don't know for the next generation if they have that same love and appreciation I feel like ours does for that movie.
We had a very similar thing growing up. I did play baseball. It was the same neighborhood we went to. There was probably like 15 of us. But we played football in this backyard, and it was maybe 50 yards long.
Yeah.
And what I learned back, that's where I learned how to be very physical, because here are the rules of our backyard football, which is what I kind of compare to the Sandlot. You got to be rough and tough to play. If you can't play, if you go home crying, you don't come back. Mm-hmm. But we played baseball. We played wiffle ball. We played with a tennis ball. We played with little, like, you know those little crab apples that fall from the tree?
Yeah,
We didn't have either of them. And for football, the rules were you didn't kick off. You had onside kicks.
Oh, wow. You guys would still do some type of kickoff.
Yes. And every fourth down, obviously, you had to go. Nobody would punt. It's 50 yards.
Mm-hmm.
But it was all tackle. No two-hand touch. So there were times that, like, kids after school, they'd be like, oh, we heard you guys are having a football game. I was like, yeah, but they didn't know the rules ever. So there were a couple times, like, one kid, like, broke his wrist. One kid got, like, a bloody nose, like, broken nose.
Wow.
It was, like, physical out there. But that's the type, like, growing up, we all had those friend groups where you played a sporting type of a basketball, played football, you played baseball, whatever it was, and that's what The Sandlot's great about. As for a movie, which do I really knock it for? They're child actors. Like, they do not look like baseball players. Like, the way they throw, the way they hit, it looks like actors playing baseball. And I know it is difficult to find, and back then, in 1993, you're not going to find some child stunt double who's just a phenom. You can't find those all over the place that look believable. But that was one thing that always irked me when I'd watch The Sandlot, because me being a cocky 8-9-year-old, I'm like, well, I could look better than that in a movie. And yet they're swinging it at balls that, you know, some kids that are like in second grade look better swinging at it. Now, there were some really good actors in that. I'm forgetting the kid that wore the Monarchs jersey, the Satchel Paige jersey. He threw the ball like he was a pitcher somewhere, which is also like in Major League with Charlie Sheen. Like, Charlie Sheen played high school baseball and it looked like he could throw. But still, in Major League, there's some guys in that movie that look like they're not baseball players whatsoever. Don't know how they got casted for that role. The Sandlot, though, soundtrack phenomenal. It always just, if you're a baseball fan, it's near and dear to your heart. Like, I don't think you can really degrade The Sandlot. So I'm going to go that it does hold up in today's world. You say yes to that as well?
Yes, yeah. I think it still holds up, because also going back to just scenes, not baseball related, but just like, all the different experiments that they do just to get this baseball back, when all you had to do was just go up and you had to face your fear of just going and knocking on the door and asking for it back. That just it makes you crack up, because it's like kids do that. They turn a little thing into a much bigger thing. Sometimes in comical ways.
Oh, yeah, there was a house behind my old house that it was right in left field.
Yeah.
And the older we got, I mean, we just hit the house every single time, and we'd always lie that it was a bird that hit the window or
something
like that.
There you go.
It's just the way little kids like to lie. Last one we'll do before we take a quick break and come back with Fact or Fiction, and we'll continue this segment tomorrow as well, because I'm liking the way this is rolling and taking up time on the show. Field of Dreams came out in 1989, Rotten Tomatoes 87%, Metacritic 57%. Kevin Costner, of course, plays Ray. Ray Liotta plays Shoeless Joe Jackson, and James Earl Jones plays Terrence Mann. Still hold up?
No, I don't think so. I think that's a movie that I'm not advocating for a remake, but you could have a remake, because a lot more that only tells one time in history of some players who had passed away. There's much more. There's since that movie came out. There's been other big name former major leaguers who have sadly left the world too soon. So that is one you could do a remake of. It's still enjoyable to watch, though. I watched it for the first time recently, like this last year. But yeah, that's I'd say no before, a little more no than yes on that one.
I really like the movie. It's not my favorite baseball movie with Kevin Costner in it. My biggest
That's
gripe
not his fault, though, because he does.
No,
he has
he's
good
a great
baseball
job.
Movies.
It's fascinating, and they made a great recreation last year with the White Sox and Yankees playing in a cornfield. My biggest gripe, and I think it's most people's gripe with the movie, why the hell does Kevin Costner at the end say, "Hey, Dad, do you want to have a catch?" What does that mean? What the hell does that mean? Why isn't that, "Do you want to play catch?"
Yeah.
What's have a catch? Is that the way they spoke back in 1908?
Maybe that's what his dad used to say to him.
I think there was an explanation as to why, because it makes no sense who wrote that down in the script and said, this sounds good. But Kevin Costner at the end playing catch with his dad, it's a cool moment. It's ruined when he goes, "Do you want to have a catch?" It's a terrible line. Therefore, it makes me borderline think the movie doesn't hold up because nobody would ever say that. Now, I think James Earl Jones' monologue will never die mm-hmm. in that, you know, the
like a lot of things he's
baseball,
done.
Yeah, the national, and the while the players are walking in and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's phenomenal. That was a nice voice crack, by the way. I've had plenty, though.
My turn.
So I'm going to go that it does hold up. Because it is a great baseball movie, aside from that horrific line that Kevin Costner has. It's not his fault. He has to read the script. So I will go that it does hold up. We will continue this segment tomorrow with these sports movies. Do they hold up? Because you know what? We need to start having more fun segments like this because the Royals aren't giving us much fun to talk about this so far in heading into the summer. We're taking a quick break. When we come back, we'll finish up with some fact or fiction. You're listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We are going to finish up the show right now with some fact or fiction. Five questions, five takes in just under 5 minutes. Marco, as soon as this will send to you, I have the fact or fiction list for you. You can fire away.
Fact or fiction, Justin Ross scores in the preseason.
I'm going to go fact on this because I think Justin Ross is going to get a lot of snaps in the preseason because they're going to see, they need to see what they can get from him and how he can line up against other players.
Mm-hmm.
Just because the cool video from OTAs yesterday makes us all excited, I want to see what Justin Ross can do against some NFL caliber players. No, they would be second, third, and maybe fourth strings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go fact on this. I think he'll play a lot of the third and fourth quarter of games 1, 2, and 3.
Fact or fiction, George Karloftis has 2 sacks by week 3.
All righty. So Arizona week 1, Chargers week 2. Kyler Murray is a tough SOB to sack. He is so elusive, he is so quick, and George Karloftis getting a sack off Kyler Murray in week 1 would probably be from running into a sack. And what I mean by that, I think most of you understand what I mean by that. That's Kyler Murray kind of running around, maybe steps up in the pocket when he shouldn't have, and there's George Karloftis waiting for him. 2 sacks by week 3 would be a sack in each game. I mean, that might be too much to ask for. I'm going to go fiction. Just because I'm not going to put that type of pressure on George Karloftis. I'll go 1 sack, though. I think he does sack one person, and wouldn't it be electric to do it against Justin Herbert in the home opener against the Chargers?
Yeah, it would be. Hey, I like that little, no pun intended, right? Electric. Fact or fiction, Field of Dreams will have a remake.
See, I didn't even think about that until you just brought it up. Who would play?
It's almost like the baseball Space Jam a little bit. I don't know.
It is, but man, did you like Space Jam 2?
No, not at all.
No, I was going to say it sucked. Now, most parents, like when we watched Space Jam growing up, they were like, "This is terrible." Like, Space Jam was terrible with Michael Jordan, but we love it.
Yeah.
Right? We just love Space Jam because we're kids, and I'm sure most people that are 6 and 7 right now, or most kids that are 6 and 7 right now, they like the Space Jam with LeBron James. I don't know if Field of Dreams needs it. It's not at a high demand. I think there's other baseball movies out there that you could remake, like
Sandlot.
They've made a couple of the sequels, yeah.
League
I'm going to go
own.
Fiction. I think Field of Dreams will be left alone because Kevin Costner is kind of one in its own. If you made it again, it would be kind of cheesy to, mm-hmm. like, the Black Sox of that team, like, that made sense of why they were coming out of the cornfield, and the Yankees as well. Like, there's nobody really since then, no team since then, that would warrant getting an entire movie based off them.
That's true. That is true. Fact or fiction, the Celtics win in 6, and with Jason Tatum leading the team in scoring.
So, once again, a very boring game last night. Another blowout game down in South Beach where Boston was able to win by a good margin. They were up by 18, I think, the last time I checked in the third or fourth quarter. They ended up winning by 13. It was kind of a snooze fest. Miami only got 80 points, and Miami simply is not scoring. I can't believe my prediction is going to come right. Boston is going to win six because apparently Miami just forgot how to score. And when you can't score in the postseason, you're not going to beat the Boston Celtics. Now, the second part of that, will Jason Tatum lead the team in scoring? Probably. I mean, last night it wasn't Jason Tatum, was it? I think it was Jaylen Brown. Yeah, Jaylen Brown had 25 last night. Jason Tatum did have 12 rebounds and 9 assists. But I don't know. Jason Tatum doesn't need to lead the team in scoring if Miami's putting up 80 a night. So yeah. If Jimmy Butler is going 4 of 18, if P.J. Tucker is 3 of 7, Max Strus is going 0 of 9, and Kyle Lowry is 0 of 6, do you really need Jason Tatum to lead the team in scoring? I'll go fact. They win in 6. But I'm going to go fiction. I don't think Jason Tatum leads him in scoring in Game 6.
And lastly, factor fiction, the Warriors clinch a spot in the NBA Finals tonight.
I think you were the one that said this on Wichita the other day that, yeah, I think it ends tonight in Game 5. I think the Mavs did get their one win. They avoided the sweep, but the Warriors tonight going into this at home, 6.5-point favorite, over-under at 215.5, tip-off at 8. Yeah, I don't think the Mavs can win in the Bay Area. They've proven they can't hold many leads. It should not be 3-1 right now. The Mavs should have a series lead for how many games they blew in the series. I'm going to go fact, though. I think the Warriors do move on tonight and await the Boston Celtics or the Miami Heat in the NBA Finals. There is Ray Charles, so it's time to go. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Coming up next, we have some ESPN Radio right here on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City.